thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi, I'm Emma Martins, and you're listening to The Longest Battle here on RNIB Connect Radio. The reason that I decided to do The Longest Battle is because I caught a virus in 2013 when I was on holiday in Vietnam. It changed my life forever, and as a result, I've had to pretty much relearn everything again, from crossing a road to making a cup of tea. So I decided that I'd talk to other people who've gone through life-changing situations. My guest today is the amazing para-athlete Vanessa Wallace, who has won a number of para-athletic shot put medals. Vanessa only got into sport after attending an athletics training session to help her to push herself better in her chair. Vanessa has the condition EDS, as well as a few other conditions. And before we find out about what EDS actually is and how it affects her, I wanted to find out a little bit more about her background. Oh, and like me, she's also an only child.
So I grew up in North London, in Tottenham, and I'm still there. I think I will be there forever.
Okay.
So I grew up in, I guess, kind of North Tottenham kind of thing, near Bruce Castle Park, for anyone who knows the area.
Yeah.
I went to school local as well, same with secondary school, so just walked everywhere.
Nice.
A lot of my family still in the area as well, so Tottenham born and raised.
Fantastic. And tell me about, you were an only child, like me.
Yeah, I know.
it's a very sad state of affairs now. It's interesting. So what was your life like when you were growing up as an only child?
It was pretty quiet, like me. I was quite shy. Not that people would ever believe that nowadays. I was big into reading. Mum used to do lots of almost like home study. We was always in the park learning about something new, going to the library. It was just, I guess it was relatively normal childhood, just quite shy and reserved.
Yeah, cool. And so tell me about your condition. How did it affect you? What was the...
So I have a couple of main conditions. First, I have something called dystonia, which is a neurological movement pattern disorder, which causes my body to go into abnormal postures. So if you were to see me, not that you can because we're on a podcast, you'd see that my feet, knees and hips rotate inwards. So
Is it like a spasm? No,
just a for me, it's become a natural place for my body to put itself.
Okay.
So if you try and straighten me out, then I spasm.
Right.
Because it's abnormal to me. And this is just what my brain now tells my body that it has to do. So you have that one. And then you have another condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which most people tend to shorten to EDS. And that's a connective tissue disorder. So I usually say to people, I'm a bit like the mum from the Incredibles movie. I just don't get the cute cat suit. I'm quite bendy. It means the collagen and the cartilage and similar type materials in my body are stretchy.
So it's like being a superhuman person, really.
Kind of, yeah, but without, unfortunately, the great
superhuman
stuff.
Powers.
Yes, I haven't quite found the power with that one. but it affects lots of different systems, affect my body in different ways, and everybody with EDS can be affected a little bit differently. So you don't get two people alike. They tend to call us zebras or zebras, because you never get two that have got the same stripes.
Oh, right, wow.
Yeah, so it affects a number of my joints. It affects my ligaments. It affects something called proprioception. So kind of, again, how my brain picks up where my body is. I can bump into air. I'm so clumsy and klutzy, but it's part of who I am.
Right, yeah. Because I guess, is it like a neurological condition? Is that what it is, or
it's
not?
It's a physical condition. So it can be your ligaments, it can be your joints, it can be all different things. But it's It's about what connects things in your body. So it isn't just joints. It's about how your organs are supported. Wow. It's about how they respond. There's different types of EDS. There's quite a few.
Yeah.
I have the hypermobile type.
Okay.
But it comes with, as I said, you know, yes, partly superhero because you're quite bendy, but then it also adds in some not so great stuff, so pain and fatigue and various other challenges that can make it quite difficult to live with.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
not pleasant. So, do you have dislocations? Is that what?
So that can come with the condition. So there's kind of stages of dislocations. So there's something. I always get this word mixed up, so I apologise if I'm not pronouncing it correctly. I think they're called subluxations, or we can call it subluxing.
Yeah.
So it means when it's kind of like a partial dislocation, or it's more movement within a joint than normally would happen. So it may not totally come out, but it's moving around. It's not stable, that's the better way to put it. It's really not stable.
Yeah.
But if you then think about something that is created to be relatively stable, if it's moving around and trying to be sociable with other bits of the body that it's not supposed to be, it's pretty uncomfortable and pretty painful.
Mm.
And that can take some time to settle back down. Because I guess with a dislocation, you pop it back in, you then deal with inflammation and pain. Subluxing, or whichever way you're supposed to say it, it can keep moving. So it's like what's around it has become loose. So you've got to wait for it to start firming back up and holding it stable again. So I don't like those.
No. That happens. How often? More. How often does that actually happen, your dislocations?
Well, remember, there's different stages. So dislocations, they vary. They can happen when they like.
But like how
subluxing,
often?
Subluxing, I sublux most days.
Most days?
Yeah. So wow. I've just come from training.
Yeah.
And I was doing one exercise and I could physically feel my wrists moving around.
Okay.
As I'm pulling on something, it's pulling open my wrist, and I know if you saw Emma's face right now. And again, it's something you then have to deal with, the fact that something's moving when it's not supposed to.
Mm. So you fit that's most days.
Yes,
that's those kind of the painful.
Depends on what you're doing or what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, what my body's like, hormone levels.
Yeah.
Lots of entertainment.
And how do you deal with the pain? What's the best treatment for you?
Again, it depends. It depends what it is, where it is, and how. Mm. The great thing, and I say that with a lot of sarcasm in my voice, with EDS, is that it also changes how pain medication works for you. So a lot of people with pain with EDS don't get the same response to pain medication as someone without EDS. So it doesn't work as well.
Right, okay.
So something like ibuprofen, which would be a good anti-inflammatory for a lot of people, may not even touch the spot.
Yeah, might not even get anywhere near you.
Anywhere near the pain. It's almost, I imagine it in my head. I like lots of pictures and imagery. So I imagine that the pain centre of the brain, when you've got EDS, has got a coating of Teflon, like the non-stick pans. So when the pain medication comes towards it, it just kind of hits it and skims off and doesn't really set in.
Yeah.
So it can be something you almost have to learn to deal with the fact that you're going to have pain.
Yeah.
That doesn't take away from it. It doesn't take it away from being debilitating at times.
Mm.
You have to learn your
Is that a
way.
Balance? Is that a balance of kind of trying all these things out without having the pain? Is that kind of
Well, it's more about, because sometimes something will work and then something won't. It's so varied. It feels a bit like a full-time job living with that condition.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of work. And there's other areas around dealing with pain which isn't medication-based. So things like cognitive behavioural therapy, pacing techniques, different things, because sometimes you can't get rid of the pain.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just there. There's nothing you can do about it.
Mm.
So it's about how to manage with the fact it's there.
Yeah.
And again, that's an ongoing, because it changes so often.
And when did you first realise that you had this condition, when you were growing up? Or what point was it? Was there a point when you suddenly went, something's not quite right? Or was it someone else telling you that this wasn't right?
It's
a
bit of everything you just said, actually. Funny enough, it was pain.
Yeah.
So I used to get a lot of pain. This is what my mum says, because I don't remember most of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to get a lot of pain, generalised pain, and it didn't look like there was any reason for it to be there. So the GP would say to my mum, no, it's growing pain, she's tall. I'm not that tall anymore. You know, it's just. And my mum was thinking, do you know what, something's not right here.
Yeah.
And no one's really listening. So she kept pushing and pushing. And then eventually I was sent to a rheumatologist who literally took one look at me and said, you've got one leg slightly shorter than the other and you're definitely hypermobile. And then as life has gone on and you can see it affects different systems, you're not just bendy, there's other factors in play.
Is that what hypermobile means?
No. So you can be hypermobile and not have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So okay. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, again, apologies if I don't get this right.
No, it's fine.
But it's when it, I think, affects different systems. So it's not just that you're flexible, because dancers can be flexible, other athletes can be flexible. That doesn't mean they've got the syndrome.
Okay.
Do you see? So it's when other parts of your body or, you know, your gastric system can be affected. It could be, I don't know, your bladder. It could be all manner. It goes all over the place when it feels like it.
Wow.
So when it affects different things, that's when they can look to see actually you might have EDS rather than you're naturally quite bendy.
Okay.
Because EDS as well, you know, you don't have stability. You can be hypermobile, build strength and have stability.
Yeah.
Do you see? So it just depends how you are impacted by it.
Yeah. And do some days are better than others?
Yeah. Definitely some days are. There's always a kind of a base level of how you are. But again, that can change day to day. But then again, things like pacing techniques and just having a really good, maybe, oh, I don't know if good is the right word, but having an awareness of your body and kind of knowing that however you are that day is just your normal that day. Things like that, again, can help with learning how to manage with having the condition, because a lot of the challenges you can't get rid of.
You just have to live with it.
But then learn how do you live with it so that you have, you know, maybe a better quality of
and
life.
And living with the pain as well,
Living with the pain and again, learning how to manage with pain in different levels, different parts of your body. You have to ride it out.
And so it just kind of happened, did it just all of a sudden come on or was it something that
I'm gonna have to assume that it kind of creeped up, because I don't remember my mum saying I don't remember my mum saying anything when I was young like little primary school young, but I was diagnosed in, I think it was my mid-teens. By then we knew there's a cause for the pain. Like I used to do sports day and I always used to think I was just a bit unfit,
right,
and that's why something was aching, not realize my hip had come out.
Ow!
Yeah, so that's a little, you know, a little clunkiness was going on there. Or my ankle would go, and just not knowing, you just think, oh, I'm just not very good at this, not realizing no, there's other things at play.
Now that we know all about Vanessa's background and the condition EDS, I wanted to find out a little bit more about how the condition affects her. So I began by asking Vanessa whether there was a moment when she found life a bit easier using her wheelchair rather than walking sticks.
That was around 2007. So by then, I think it was around 2007. By then, I was already using sticks to walk with. So I'd gone from walking on 2 feet and struggling a bit, and then getting a stick. I think I bought it from a chemist. Like I was just like, no, let me just keep moving. And then realizing I wasn't that balanced, and then second stick, and my legs were getting worse. So they're getting more bendy. I was struggling to weight bear.
Bendiness not really helping.
And then I got diagnosed with dystonia. It was around Stanmore time, so around those years. But it's quite likely that the symptoms were creeping in early, much earlier. So the things where I'm thinking, oh, my legs, I'm not weight bearing, potentially could have been dystonia as well, because my legs were getting into funny positions and I just thought they were bendy. So it's kind of, there's no fixed point of when like the dystonia kicked in, but my body wasn't happy for years. So 2007 was when I got my first chair. It was a big struggle before then.
So were you working before that, or should I go back a bit further? What were you?
So I used to actually work not far from where we're recording.
Okay, yeah.
So I used to work up in Moorgate. So I used to work in finance, like an accounts assistant.
Okay.
Loved it.
Did you?
I did. I miss it. My old Gresham crew. I do miss them. And then bit by bit, it was just getting really hard. to actually the pain levels I was in from that those two conditions and some other stuff. Things were just too hard. And it just got, I fought really hard to keep going. And then eventually my body was like, you know what, stop this. Really, it's not worth it.
You
know, it's just not worth
it. So you realise, and then you're in the chair as well then.
You know, I used to try going to adult education just to keep busy. I'm not very good at not doing anything. You know, active recovery is better for me than doing nothing. And again, it was a way to at least see people, not be so isolated. Learn something new without huge amount of pressure. And I tried that for a while and enjoyed it.
And Stanmore, they helped you there really to become more aware of everything that's going on and giving your freedom back, I guess. That was what...
Well, because I said you're there for such a short period of time. I mean, to me, those 3 weeks, it felt like
only
it could have
weeks,
been... Only 3 weeks.
Oh, right. I thought you were in there for quite a long time.
No.
Oh, right.
And then I went back for another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I went back again sometime later for another 2 weeks. So all within...
I thought you had a couple of years.
No,
no. Okay, wow.
Back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
And then I was very, very lucky to have repeated admissions for this particular program. I think the first one was pain management and the other two might have been rehab all the other way around.
Something like that. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, so then you're in Stanmore for a little while. So when did it actually happen that you... Was there a decision when you had to be full-time in a chair? Was that the decision?
Yeah, that was about 4 years ago. And I think it was about four. It might be creeping up a bit higher. And a physio said to me, kind of like, enough of trying to stand because my hips would sublux. And then I'd have to deal with that on top of everything else because you don't know how long it's going to take to settle. And the pain was just unbearable. And it was dangerous because I wasn't stable. On my feet, so it wasn't a bad thing, kind of.
It took the pressure off you at that point, I guess.
It's strange. It's more for me, like my chair, my wheels are more about they keep me independent rather than thinking about them being like an anchor. And you know, without if I, you know, I'm in my chair, so therefore I can't do anything. Well, I learn how.
You're very
to
mobile
do
to get here. I know. I didn't need to do. You know, it's amazing you're there, able to do anything, which
but
is fantastic.
It takes time, and it takes having good people around you as well. And as I said, my chair helps with my independence. My chair, to me, I like a pair of stilettos. Love stilettos. Oh my goodness. Wearing now. Can't help it. I'm not in trainers. You know, the stilettos come out. But that's how I see it. I see it as a positive. It's kind of an extension of me. It's not just the definition. But it helps. If I didn't have my chair, goodness knows, I'd just be at home.
Now we know how Vanessa's wheelchair has helped her and how she looks upon her chair like a pair of stilettos, I wanted to find out a little bit more about how Vanessa got into sport and competing at world level para athletics, which I think came from Vanessa always saying yes to lots of different challenges, which took her outside her comfort zone.
So we're going to go back very quickly to 2012-ish. And I, life was changing at that point. So I'd had my Stanmore intakes and I had joined a local sports group just to learn to see if I could push my own chair better. And I needed something to change. But I felt really limited. That's the best way because I didn't know. Life had changed so much. So to be ridiculously brave, stupidly brave, I decided to say yes to everything.
Okay,
I know, apparently there's a film about this somewhere.
Yes Man,
there you go. Which I had not and still haven't seen. And it was that, it was kind of like a, I don't know what it is I can do, I don't know how to do, but I'm just going to say yes. And that's where I'm going to start.
Amazing.
And see what happens.
So what was your first yes? What was your first yes?
My first yes was actually... So there's a lovely lady called Tamsin Fudge who was the athletics activator in my local borough. And she'd set up the help or helped support setting up the group that I joined.
What was the group?
It was called the Haringey Wheelers. And it was a wheelchair racing group. And when I saw it, I thought, well, I'm too... lots of not so great words. So there's no way I can do sport, but it did say come and learn to push your own chair better.
Amazing.
So again, I thought, I don't know if I can go every week. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'll go.
Yeah.
And then later that year, Tamsin obviously saw something, not sure what at the time, but she offered me the chance to train as the assistant athletics coach. So again, I didn't know much about athletics other than what I'd seen on the TV with Linford Christie back in the day. But I thought she'd offered, say yes. Just say yes. You don't need to know everything about it. Just say yes.
Yeah.
So I did. And I went. And I became a qualified assistant athletics coach.
Okay.
And then started supporting the group that I was in.
And how long ago was this?
2012.
So that was your first one. So yes. What happened next?
Okay, so by then I had been training a little while that year. I was then able to fit into a racing chair. I think I did one 5K race and my body said, hell no, you are not doing this. Which is where the coaching came in. So I got involved, and then the opportunity to do something called classification came up. And within athletics and, I guess, disability sport, you go through a process called classification where you're assessed to make sure you're competing against people who are similar to you. So in my class, the 34s, which is a neurological class, a seated neurological class, I will get individuals who've got, say, cerebral palsy, stroke survivors, MS, all range of stuff. So I trundled along to Newham. So I went along, went through classification in case I had dreams of still being a wheelchair racer. I'm just saying, Hannah, I'm not coming for your title. I'm sticking with throwing. And went through the process, fine, got my classification. And then a gentleman called Steve, who is a coach in Barnet, came up to me and he, typical Steve, love you, he said to me, Ness, you thought about being a thrower? You're built for it. It did feel like a little bit of impact.
Okay.
You know, in my ignorance, I didn't realise that was actually a phenomenal thing that he was saying to me.
Absolutely.
So the next yes was where Steve Harris, I think his name is, said, go along to Lee Valley Athletic Centre and find this coach called Alison O'Riordan. Just go and talk to her. And then wandered off in typical Steve fashion.
Yeah.
So I had to find a venue. I had to find this person who I'd never met before and go and see. Go and just be there. And I went. I met her. I think she found it quite amusing what Steve had said. She said she might have put it maybe differently. And I think I had a few sessions, not many at all, because I was due to go off and have a prearranged surgery, nothing to do with throwing. And that was it. That was our, you know, my kind of first encounter. And then that year,
so were you doing? Did you try throwing? Throwing? Does that mean shot put? Is that
shot? So it's shot put for 34s. It's shot put and javelin.
So you do both.
I'm learning javelin. Slowly. I'm learning it very slowly.
So shot put.
Shot put's my main one. But throws is shot, javelin, discus, hammer for ambulant throwers, and club throws.
Amazing. So you learn all of those things within that area.
Well, it would depend on what your class is, because your class will determine what events are available for you on a Paralympic pathway.
Okay.
So I do discus for my university because I love ya, UEL, all the way, East London. But there's no discus at the Paralympics for my classification. Okay. So it's almost like working out where to best put your focus. So there's no point focusing on discus all year when I'm not actually going to progress on a Paralympic level with it. So that's how it works.
Okay, sounds interesting.
Michael, you should come and try it.
Yeah, I know.
So I should. What do you reckon? I think Emma should come and try it.
Maybe.
We can squeeze her in.
So what kind of random things has this led to?
So saying yes or throwing?
Oh, both, really. What's the...
Okay, so on the saying yes list, we have... participating in a video encouraging wheelchair users to be mobile, so mm-hmm. learning some physio exercises. Mm-hmm. And this is the girl who used to do photography so that she didn't have to be in the photos.
Okay, things
suddenly,
have changed.
A little bit. Yeah. So that was me pushing myself to be in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Because I had to say yes.
Yeah. So you're having to do saying yes, and then it took you into this area where you're trying to do the...
different things. Yeah. Literally, just whatever opportunities came, it was kind of changing my mindset to... if someone's offering me an opportunity to do something, it's because they think I can do it. So even if I don't think I can do it, if they think I can do it, it'd be a bit rude to kind of turn them down.
Yeah.
Within reason.
Yeah.
So the wheelchair thing was with my local Haringey Wheelchair Services and the forum got some funding and did something that could be given to people to aid them. And then you had things like me training with Instructability and Aspire, funnily enough, based at Stanmore, as a fitness instructor, a level two gym instructor.
Yeah.
What else have I done as a result of saying yes? I did get to start doing public speaking.
That's a hard one.
That was interesting.
But it's something that I feel that we all need to... I'm terrible at public speaking, but you kind of have to do it occasionally. And it's it's a good thing to do and feel that you're able to do those kind of stuff.
I think so. I think I enjoy it now. I really, really do. Because you get to meet so many different people. You get to share stuff. But I do remember doing the England Athletic staff conference and I was the closing speaker.
Wow.
And I think I was really tired, my pain levels had gone up, and for some reason I was really cold. So I remember doing this particular talk, kicked my heels off, so I didn't have any stilettos on. They were under a table somewhere, sitting, sipping really strong coffee to stay awake and alert, refusing a microphone because I thought I was so gobby that I could be heard at the back of the room anyway. And it turned out to be a fantastic speech.
Amazing.
And people in the audience were really,
surprise
really receptive.
Surprise yourself at the end.
Always. Have a go.
Yeah. So tell me, how did you get into athletics? How did this all happen?
It was part of that whole saying yes again. It was Steve Harris telling me, you're built for it. It was meeting my coach, Alison O'Riordan, and then what I call my red lipstick and a tweet moment. So we had our initial meeting, where I tried it out, and then I went off and did life. And finally, eventually got into a little bit of work as well.
Yeah.
And Alison tweeted me.
Okay.
At the end of, I think it was 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And said, congrats on kind of what you've been doing. When are you going to come back and try throwing? I was, I don't know. So much in life has changed. There's so many demands. I'm not necessarily in the greatest place. I don't know. Back to that thinking.
Yeah, but then you come back and then you think, actually,
what it was a conversation at work with a lady. We were over lunch and we were talking about women and bravery and how sometimes, and it's not always intentional, that we can be the ones who push people forwards, which means there isn't necessarily enough energy to push ourselves forward.
Mm.
And then that becomes almost your new normal, that you're not the one progressing. So very deep conversation over sandwiches. go back to my laptop and the internet's down. It's almost the end of the day, so I pack up, head home. Stop off at the number 7 counter in Wood Green Shopping Centre in Boots. Get tag teamed by the ladies on the counter, convinced to try some red lipstick, felt quite brave, came back, tweeted back to Alison, when do you train? And she said, same as when I met you a couple of years ago, I'll see you next week. And it started from there. And I still didn't actually even think I was an athlete. I thought I might just get a bit fit.
It's that red lipstick. That's what it was.
I'm telling you, change is revolutionary.
Number 7.
All about the number 7. And they've changed it since, but I still love you.
How do you balance your condition with being a full-time athlete?
It's part of the package. So it's tough. It's very, very tough. I mean, being an athlete means putting your body through things that most people don't do on a day-to-day basis.
Mm.
Add on top of that whatever extras that you've got.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Please
do not look at anyone who is working hard in anything, especially athletics or sport in general, and think they must find it easy, especially if they're a para athlete, because your condition doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away. You know, if anything, you're challenging it even more while still trying to achieve greatness.
Yeah.
It's tough. Massive. So I can't even really answer that question of how do you do it? You just try.
Motivation, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and it's more motivation of I don't want to lose what, you know, we're working so hard on and the life that I'm now getting to be involved in.
Mm.
So you just try. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't,
you
know, but all you can do is try.
Vanessa is such a lovely lady with a warm, bubbly personality. And I wondered whether it was maybe her personality which has helped her to get to where she is today.
I think it has. There's been some times when it's not been that way, when it's been quite grey and hard to be kind of bubbly and, you know, bouncing around.
Yeah.
And even when I am bouncing around, sometimes I'm not feeling like I'm really bouncing around. But it's part of me.
Yeah.
You know, the good, the bad and the ugly, it's all part of it. I like being warm, I like being bubbly, I like being engaging, I like being approachable. I was quite, as I said, I was quite shy when I was young and didn't have many friends, and it's quite nice now still being, most people don't realise, relatively shy, but still being able now to not be that kind of withdrawn and introvert person. I can be somewhat extrovert, but go typical Gemini, I go between the two.
Yeah.
But it does help, you know, having a positive attitude where you can.
Do you think, to try to push things forward, to get these opportunities? That's the thing. I don't, you know, they probably wouldn't offer it to everyone. And I think that, you know, I think you've been lucky, but amazing. You've done so well in getting all these things. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things that can make you memorable. I guess you can say, and that people are open, and that's just it. Sometimes it's, you don't have to be bouncing off the walls, you don't have to be everybody's friend, but if I see it as, if you're open to the universe and you're open to people, again with boundaries, that it just allows almost conversations to happen that might not happen if people think you're a bit closed. But again, it's about what works for you. And for some people it does and some people it doesn't, and I think as it's part of me, it works.
It's fantastic. Totally inspirational.
Thank you.
So are you excited about the future?
Oh my goodness, yes. So excited. I feel like a little kid. Just simply because there's so much you can't predict, and you don't necessarily know what's coming. So how can you not be excited?
Yeah.
Like, because it's not been written yet. Some has, some hasn't. And there's so many things to look forward to. Everything that's being built now, whether it's physically, whether it's educationally, socially, is leading somewhere. And I don't know what that looks like. So that's quite cool.
Finally, I wanted to find out what Vanessa's advice would be for someone who maybe is going through a life-changing situation like the one that she's been through.
My best bit of advice would be, give yourself permission to feel and experience what you're going through. I spent a long time, and still have habits of doing it now, where you dismiss what you're thinking or what you're feeling. And I had to be told, it's okay to feel how you feel. You're almost justified in how you're thinking and feeling to me, because it's coming out of you. So, but running alongside that, I would say find support. In a positive way. And you may need to try different things, but if possible, don't do it on your own. You know, even if it's somewhere that you can even just go to and have a cup of tea and just sit, and there's people milling about and doing whatever, a cafe, something where you're outside of your space.
Staying busy, I guess. And
it may be busy. For some people, it's actually learning to embrace being quiet.
Okay, yeah.
You know, sometimes being busy can be such a distraction that you're not actually acknowledging or mindful of what it is that's going on. But if someone's going through something, I would say you're not on your own. It may feel like it. It may feel like you're at the depths of everything and there's nowhere else to go. But if it feels like the bottom, that means, and again, it sounds cheesy, that the only way is to move up. One thing I would strongly believe is that the only constant thing is change. And sometimes we have to look for what that change is, because we may not see it, because we're so immersed in what we're doing and what we're experiencing that we can't see that every second, every millisecond, something's changing, something's moving. And it's about finding our way into seeing that and then accepting that. And then maybe there might be some kind of change.
Excellent. Excellent. And of course you need to say yes to everything. That's all as well.
I'm still putting
that's my advice.
That's definitely my thing. That's my waiver.
You've been listening to The Longest Battle here on RNIB Connect Radio with me, Emma Martins, and my guest, the amazing Vanessa Wallace. To find out about my own longest battle and to hear any other podcast episodes, please visit my website, thelongestbattle.co.uk.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.